get ready for a Lone Star Showdown at NRG Stadium as the Rice Owls take on the Texas Longhorns this Saturday, September 14th. It's presented by Smart Financial. Don't miss out on a prime-time college football game between two old Southwest Conference rivals battling it out on Houston's biggest stage. Tickets are now on sale now, starting at $35. Call 713-348-OWLS or visit thericeowls.com/NRG to get your tickets today. So the Longhorns, coming off their loss to LSU, will be in town to play the Rice Owls. Now back to John and Lance.
All right, 713-780-3776. Alex has been, this is his second stint. He wants to talk about Wade Miley. This is kind of a big deal. What's going on with Wade Miley and your Houston Astros? Let's get Alex in here. Hey, Alex.
What's up, John? How are y'all doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
I'd be a lot better if this wasn't a thing. All right, so basically the way this is all working out, I don't want to be negative. I don't want to be that guy, and I hope I'm wrong. I really do want to be wrong. But whenever I found out we signed Miley, I did what any normal person would do, and I Googled, who is Wade Miley? Checked out his stats, I looked at everything, and I noticed that basically his best seasons were whenever he didn't pitch more than 160 innings. I don't know for sure if that's due to injury or what. All I know is that once he pitches over 160 innings, mm-hmm. like that's almost the mark. Mm-hmm. Once he hits that mark, it goes downhill. Wade just hit 156 innings, and I think we can agree that he's had at least two terrible starts, right? And then I think he had one maybe a month or two ago where he just didn't do well at all. I don't know if there's anything to this. I'm not like able to really research it any more than I already have probably. And I haven't really been able to get anybody to give me any confirmation on whether or not this is real. But, I mean, this is kind of a thing. And it goes with the Astros. Like, a lot of people are not realizing that the whole Bagwell-Biggio era, that's not happening again. It's not going to. As much as we want to think about it happening, it's just not likely. Then who's going to play for that many years for this team? It's not going to be Jose. It's not going to be George. It might be Bregman, but the whole new culture started already because it started.
Why won't Jose be here?
Oh, he's going to be here, but he's already. How old is he?
Yeah, but okay. So how many years do you want him to play? By the way, at the end of the Bagwell thing, what a terrible contract that was. Mm-hmm. I mean, and Biggio lasted as long as he did because Drayton wanted to get as many bobblehead nights as he possibly could for 3,000.
He wanted to get to 3,000. Yeah,
he wanted to get.
I get it.
I get that. But there's no reason that Jose can't be productive here in another contract. By the way, when this contract is up, he'll be what, 36 or so, or 37. There's no reason that Jose Altuve can't sign another deal where he could get close to 3,000.
We'll see how he's. I mean, it's all based on how he's performing, but
yeah, right.
I think he could be very close to 3,000.
I don't get that. Yeah, well, Springer's an older player. Springer, at the end of when he's through with arbitration, is going to be 31 years old. So Springer is, you know, he came up late, and that's he went to college, and then the team was really, really bad, so they took their time bringing him up. Bregman is older now. Bregman went to college. He got up pretty soon, but Bregman's not as young as you think.
And Jose Altuve's been on the major league roster since he was 21. If he's done at 36, that's 15 years. How long is he supposed to play?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Jose. I think he's going to have another contract after that.
Well, if he wants to.
Jose Altuve is going to end up as the greatest Astro ever.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, Bregman is... obviously wants a little piece of that conversation.
But Bregman didn't get
Springer
here.
Springer wants it, but the fact is, Bregman got here pretty early.
No, he was in college.
In college, but relative to that, it was one year.
What, 24 he got here? Altuve's got 3 years on him.
How old is Bregman right
now? He's 26, 20, yeah. He's going to be 30-something. He's going to be over 30 when he's done with this deal.
Bregman is 25.
25. Yeah, he'll be 30.
He was
22.
He was 22 when he got on the roster.
That's pretty good. I mean, this is his fourth year. He was 22. That's not bad.
All right. Well, but he's going to be, when this deal is up, he's going to be 30 years old. I mean, so he's going to have another deal. Bregman will, but Jose Altuve, yeah, they're going to be lifers. Those two guys have the best shot at being lifers.
I'm not saying lifers anymore for anything in sports. It's just the landscape is changing because of the money, so you never know. But Jose Altuve, I think he is the greatest Astro. But I understand people will get upset about that. But you can get upset. I'm just waiting for the clock to tick off because I don't know when it is. When does enough time have to pass that you'll say, okay, here's a his accomplishments are worth it. The 3,000 hit thing is a durability. Is an assessment of durability.
Part of the last couple of years he has been injured. So he has them. Listen, if he could stay healthy and those legs will hold up, I think he can. He'll easily hit 3,000. I think he could vie for 4,000 hits.
Ooh, boy, it's so much in this day and age.
Well, why? I mean, it's not like he's a pitcher that he only pitches every 5 days.
It's hard.
You haven't
to get
changed.
To three.
He's going to get 600 plus at bats a year.
It's just hard to get to. It's hard to get.
But
3,
he's got again. He's got to stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, 15 years, John, at 200 hits.
That's
3,000. 15 years of 200 hits. How many 200 hit seasons has he had?
He's already halfway there.
No, I recognize it, but how old is he right now?
He's right now, Jose Altuve is 29.
Okay, so he's been in the league for 9 years?
Another 8 years. And he's 37. Are you kidding? Jose Altuve will
That's
keep on 3,
hitting. That's
3,000. But how many more hits does Jose Altuve get just because of how fast he is? Now, last year, the last 2 years, he's had,
Jose Altuve to 4,000 would be like a...
He had 590, and this year he had some injury concerns as well. 534 at-bats last year, which is 100 fewer at-bats than he was having in previous years. The year before, he had about 60 fewer at-bats than he was having in previous years. So he's losing at-bats by having some leg problems.
Well, he's also getting walked.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to take, you know.
Well, he got walked before that, too, though.
But that,
especially when he was the only hitter in the lineup.
But what exactly is the argument here?
I don't know. He was saying that we're done with lifers. We're not done with lifers. But Bregman will be a lifer, and so will Altuve.
Well, to me, I don't care. As long as you're a lifer for like an Akeem Olajuwon lifer, that's really all that matters. If Bregman wants to go play, I mean, not Bregman. If Altuve wants to go play 2 years somewhere else, a 2-year deal, and he's hitting 240 at the time. It's not the end of the world. It sucks from a but you know what? Andre Johnson is a Texans lifer who happened to play a year in Indianapolis. He's with the Texans staff now. The lifer thing, okay, the only thing that matters is, do you get all of the best years? That's really what it boils down to. Do you get all the prime years? The Astros are getting all the prime years with, I think, Bregman, Springer, Altuve. I just don't see Carlos Correa as...
No.
Not only is he not an Astros lifer, I just really have questions about... I would make Correa leaves minus 250, Correa stays plus 170. Which one are you taking?
Leaves.
Yeah.
So Altuve right now, 110 games with only 16 to play. This will be his fewest number of games since his rookie year. So and he's trending poorly because he played in 137 games the last year, 153, 161, 154, 158, 152, 147 in the years previous to that. So these last couple of years are his fewest games played since his rookie year. That's starting to become a bit of a problem.
That's why the 4,000 hit thing is impossible nowadays, because you have to play. Not only do you have to play 20 years minimum.
But he's the kind of player that can play 20
years. That's 2,200 hit seasons. That's not possible. He doesn't have 20. He'd have to have a 200 hit season every year that he plays. It's just not possible. And the other thing is, the money means you don't have to play as long. But the second thing is, the getaway days, there are teams now understand load management a little bit better, and there are going to be guys who get days off. Like back in the day, you'd see some guys go 160. 161.
Yeah.
That's not going to be that way anymore. And you know what? It shouldn't. If your goal is to get 3,000 hits, then play as much as you can. If your goal is to win championships, be smart.
Hey, they still won 150 games. 812 ESPN 97.5. I got to talk right now about my man, Doc Linville. He did an unbelievable job. I'm waiting because it takes some time, but I got the Neo graft where I've got a giant 9-iron divot out of the back of my head, but the male pattern balding. And Fred had a lot more stuff to do on his head than I did.
Wow. Well,
he really did.
Shoot at him like
well,
that.
Well, he had 5-6 head going on. Okay, so the front is not nearly as bad, but the back, and it was such an easy process. Minimal pain. it's natural because it is my hair. Got the business from my friends, and they're, you know, they give you a little bit of business. And I was like, sorry, I just moved my hair. Okay, that's all I did, and it couldn't have been easier. And they can't be nicer. They can't be more accommodating. They can't be better at their profession. You're going to be more self confident. You're going to have a more professional appearance, youthful appearance, vigorous appearance. Especially if you're single out there trying to find somebody. Hair matters. So if you're looking for a great way to replace that hair, it's not hair plugs. It's NeoGraft. Get to Linville Plastic Surgeons. They're unbelievable. Go to 975hair.com. That's 975hair.com. All right, Dana Holgorsen is going to join us at the bottom of the hour here on ESPN 97.5.
Well, there's somebody here on Twitter named Elizabeth Garcia.
Don't know okay?
This is crazy. So Tim Kalischow said, I said last week Zeke would sign. This is on September 2nd. I said last week Zeke would sign by the time I'm back on radio. It wasn't breaking news, just pure logic, and it might be right. If I'm off by an hour, forgive me. This guy comes in and says, RIP at Old Takes Exposed Mentions. Then a girl named Elizabeth Garcia says, nope, Zeke is signing tomorrow. I have inside info. Another guy says, laughing my ass off. No, you don't. She says, cousin works for the scouting department. First of all, you got your whole ass
you just
real
told,
name. So shut up.
And you just told everybody who's giving you inside information.
Yeah. Cousin works for the scouting department for the Cowboys. This is September 3rd. You'll see when the deal is done tonight by 8 p.m. Eastern. The guy goes, okay, 6 years, $90 million. So since I was right here, and then September 5th, she goes, So since I was right here, if you want further proof I have inside info, Antonio Brown will be released by the Raiders in the upcoming days. This is September 5th. He goes, you dumb for real. This deal was rumored to be 6 years, $90 million before you said something. Plus, the contract was worth more than $90 million. No, it wasn't. You stated rumors and were still wrong. And anyone who watched football knows AB most likely will be suspended week one and then released. She said, I told you the Zeke deal would be signed, and you doubted me. He said, I didn't doubt Zeke signing. I doubted your inside sources, which I still don't believe you have any. This is all on September 5th. On September 5th, she goes, okay, you don't have to believe me. I'll just keep dropping news before it happens throughout the season. Use it as you wish. Then on September 7th, she goes, inside info. In the upcoming days, news is going to come out on Antonio Brown being pressed on charges pressed for rape. September 7th, she said this.
What's
and September 7th, she goes, and here it is, the request for release. Believe me now, AB just posted this. This is on September 7th. Officially released. He goes, we all knew he was getting released. TF, I said that yesterday, didn't I? I could be a source with the info that everybody knows. You an idiot. Everybody knew he was going to be suspended, not released. Most educated would know if you threaten your GM.
What kind
most
of follow this girl? Who released. Is she?
Then she goes, not sure if it's true or not. The woman could be lying to get attention, but the report is going to come out soon. This is September 7th. Then today she goes, believe me now? And now all of a sudden everyone's like, damn, that boy been silenced. Then she's got a miss. People responding with Mr. T's. I'll show you her
What's her name? Elizabeth Garcia?
Yeah, Liz Garcia 901111. She's got 1,985 followers now. She's got a lot more. She's followed by me, the Podfather. Pat O'Neill, Mr. Ass, from our fantasy league is following her. So, yeah, I do believe her that she has inside sources. I do believe it's her cousin, and I do believe she's going to stop getting sources once her follower count gets up to about 3,000 and she keeps talking. He's going to be like, hey, Liz, are you on Twitter telling everybody I'm your source? What are you doing?
I don't think she gets this whole
I'm
source.
I'm going to get fired.
Liz Garcia what?
I don't know. Liz Garcia 901. 111. And I truly believe that she's getting inside information. So, and this is how it happens. People, like, I've got a guy who listens to the show who told me that he's like, oh, by the way, Andre Johnson and Frank Gore are headed to Indianapolis on a plane right now. I'm like, what? So I put that out there, and I believe this guy. I put this out there, and I get a call from my boss. This is in whatever year one of me doing NFL or maybe year two of doing NFL.com stuff. He goes, hey, it's John. Hey, how sure are you on this? Because they wanted to break this. I'm like, well, that's when I knew it. Seriously, like, I'm pretty sure. I think I think so, yeah. The guy I have, I really trust him. He goes, so you'd go out, you'd put yourself out on a limb that this is true? And then right then, Mark Berman says, Andre Johnson says he's sitting right next to a swimming pool. Here's a picture he posted. But in the meantime, he was literally on a plane. And I said, yeah. I said, I believe this guy. I know where he's getting his information. I believe him. And they didn't end up doing anything with him. And then, of course, the guy ended up being right. It's people who are – how many times – you've seen this too, I'm sure, where people – we'll reach out on direct message and Twitter and like, hey, my wife is a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. And this guy just came and did that. That kind of stuff you have to be a little leery of.
Yeah, real leery.
But I have learned stuff where people have actual – I've had people who know have inside information on Aggie stuff and how they just – you know somebody who knows somebody who they talked to because the thought is at a dinner, like, this guy's not going to – like, what is it? How would this – well, they don't know that this guy listens to John and Lance and might contact one of us. But I have gotten stuff from just average, regular people who end up being right. But you never know, you so that's why you can't really go
can't
with it.
That. You can't use that. Rumor of real estate rumor is the best.
Oh, that's been out there forever.
Yeah. Let's get Justin in here.
Or airport rumor.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I saw somebody.
Well, unless
Jordan was at an airport.
Well, unless you see Mark Berman interviewing him at the airport, it's a not believable. What's up, Justin?
Hi, man. How's it going this morning?
Good.
All right. Hey, I got a two-part question, and I'm pretty sure Lance could probably answer this for me. I don't know if I've been living under a rock or what, but this 10-second runoff rule where they make you either use the timeout or run 10 seconds off the clock, when did that happen? And I'm not understanding it, I guess. I don't understand the point of it. And then two, when the official made them run the 10 seconds off of when the clock was at 20-something seconds instead of 40-something seconds, what they should have done, why didn't they correct that? Why did they just follow through with it? Why didn't somebody kind of stand up or come out and say, hey, that should have been coming, you know, we need to bring the clock back to 40-something seconds, then run the 10 seconds off?
It was 41.
I'm not understanding what the problem was.
It was 41 seconds, and the refs just screwed up again. I mean, it was just a referee error again. And I think the Saints were complaining about it, but they just said, no, in typical ref fashion. And then they came back and said, oh, we screwed that up. Sorry. And the 10-second rule is because, okay, let's say you got the ball and you want to stop. You don't have any way to stop the clock because you're out of timeouts. So you fake an injury. So it stops the clock so that you can get your lined up and run a play. Well, if you have an injury, they say, no. You can take care of the injured guy, but you lose 10 seconds.
And now, well, at least in this case, it was 10 seconds because they stopped play to measure. So they still ran the 10 seconds off because that's the, I guess, well, if you don't call timeout, that's how long it's going to take for you to get up to the line and snap the football. Because there was an injury. They were just, gave the Saints an extra timeout because they were reviewing first down or not. So that's why they say, well, we got to take 10 seconds off the clock. Unfortunately, they did it from the point that they blew the whistle to do the measurement.
So they need to change that rule because if they screwed up and measured them short and they had to review it and then give them the first down, they shouldn't penalize the Saints for that.
Well, that would
because
be,
it was their
the
screw up, right?
Yes, it was. The ref screwed
up. The ref screwed up by not giving them a first down, so you're going to penalize the Saints 10 seconds?
Yes.
That's something that they'll have to look at this offseason. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't penalize the Saints because you mismarked the football.
Let me tell you, we didn't make a big deal about it because no one in Houston really cares after the Texans lose the way they did. They want to talk about the game and listen to us talk about the game and stuff like that. But the fact that you were in New Orleans where the most egregious refereeing mistake in the history of sports, if you really want to get down to it, it's got to be in the top three up there with like 72 Olympics, which is the one with the basketball.
Yeah, 72.
72 Olympics. If you really want to get down to it, this cost a team, this is an easy call that they missed that cost a team a Super Bowl. That's the historical ramifications for an organization, for a city, the fiscal ramifications for an organization, all of this, it completely changed. On the same site that it happened in the very next game that was played there, they had a clock issue that they didn't catch that very well cost the Saints 3 points because they would have been able to get an extra play. And we know the Texans aren't good at stopping the Saints with extra plays.
Yeah.
With a little bit of time left. We know that historically from one game last year
right.
or last week or in this last game against the Saints. But how do you screw that up? And the official who's Pat Perry or whoever's like,
This is very important. It's the most watched game for it's the most important game for referees in the last 20 years. He said it on ESPN. Then he's bragging about, this has really been a great game. That's a great call. That's that. Then they bring him on after half. He goes, well, so there's a – so well, something a little bit unfortunate happened at the end of the half.
One by four up.
I swear on Jesus. So we had a – accidentally ran off 14 extra seconds, and they messed it up.
And they missed the field goal. And luckily, the Saints won.
No, not luckily.
Well, luckily for the refs. I want to talk right now about you winning, and you winning some golf tournament. And right now, I want to talk about the Island Dirty Birdie Charity Golf Classic, sponsored by DeCrew DeRue and Mac Vibe. Friday, September 27th, Moody Garden Golf Course. It is the place to be. We're going to be there live. It's benefits. It's nice because it's Elmina Shriners and the Ronald McDonald House of Galveston all going to benefit. Go to dirtybirdie.easyevents.com. It's going to be fun. I'm telling you, Tiny, he puts together a wonderful tournament. There's going to be plenty of libations. So make sure that you stay in Galveston. This is going to be on a Friday, September 27th, so you can spend the weekend in Galveston. Go to a place where you can watch all your football, but be in beautiful Moody Gardens. It's at the Moody Gardens Golf Course, and start off the weekend right. Teams and corporate sponsors are still available. If you want to have some fun, hey, you can win a car, a top-of-the-line driver. You can play Pebble Beach. You can win a trip, all-expense-paid trip, to Pebble Beach. DirtyBirdie.EasyEvents.com. That's DirtyBirdie.EasyEvents.com.
This is the Dana Holgorsen Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Chastang Ford, Damaris Barbecue, and HR&P. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's John Lance and Coach Dana Holgorsen.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. You know what that music means. We're going to talk to the head coach of the Houston Cougars. Dana Holgorsen is going to join us here on ESPN 97.5. It is brought to you by Damaris Barbecue, HR&P, and Chastang Ford. All three really love the Cougs, really love Dana, and this is obviously, you know, something that they've always, they want to be a part of this. And so if, you know, you're looking to buy that car, you're looking for that HR and payroll company, or you're looking for barbecue, or as Dana says, the best Mexican food in the city, then it is Damaris Barbecue. He's joining us here shortly. Apparently we're having an issue getting him. He's got his, by the way, he's got his radio show tonight on the other station, but it's an hour where you can go and see it. That's tonight at Lil Woodrow's on Shepherd. So if you're looking for something to do tonight, if you're a Cougs fan, you want to go see Dana.
Don't listen, just go watch live.
Yeah, just go watch live.
Don't listen.
Don't listen on the radio. No. I don't even know what station it's on.
I don't either. I wouldn't listen. I would just go see
because,
it.
Because, I mean.
Be careful. We're on the medium of radio. Don't just slander radio.
I'm not slandering radio. I'm slandering the promotion of it. I don't know. We're I know where it is. It's at Lil Woodrow's tonight, 7 o'clock. Dana's going to be there. So get on over there and meet Dana tonight. He's joining us right here on ESPN 97.5. What's up?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Yeah. Well, so another short week. And, you know, maybe you can go, you got to get the players in it. They got to get their day off. And obviously you want your players to rest and you want them to be, you know, have mentally and physically ready to be playing. But this stretch, Dana, you talked about it before the season started, how much this sucks. You know, 6 days to get ready while everybody else has got their regular 7 days for the most part. That this stretch is about 4 games in 19 days. Now that you're in the middle of it, maybe you could talk about the difficulty of it.
Well, it's pretty much routine for me. You know, I think there's probably the thing that we're on guard for is the fatigue factor for the players over the course of 19 days. I sense this being a little exhausted last night, which is normal, just because you gotta regroup and get out there and get your work done here pretty quick and get on schedule as quick as we can. So, You know, but then, it, you know, but the hay's in the barn at this point, so we got to, you know, we focus on recovery and the mental aspect of the game here for the next 48 hours and, you know, really the next 68 hours, whatever it is, until kickoff Friday night. So we'll be ready to go. You know, we got a big challenge ahead of us, but I got our work done. You know, we can't not practice, right? So we got to get out there and get the work done. We did. Hopefully we'll recover the right way and be ready to go on Friday night.
With all that you know about Leach, I mean, obviously it's so difficult to but you know this offense as well as anybody. So how difficult, I mean, is it a little bit of an advantage for you getting ready for this football game?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's funny. It's the first time I've went against them since, I guess it was 2009. You know, I left them in 2007, was here at UH in 08 and 09, and, you know, haven't really crossed paths with them. And there really hadn't been a lot of film carryover either, just because of West Coast, we just didn't have any crossover, hadn't went up against each other or any of that, so... I tell you, he's doing a great job. I thought his coaching season last year was the best that he's had in his career. Honestly, they lost a lot of guys, they lost a lot of coaches. They plugged a new quarterback in, who evidently is pretty good. Gardner Minshew had a pretty good game for the Jaguars yesterday or a couple of days ago. And then they won 11 games and finished 10th in the country. That to me was pretty impressive. And then, you know, I started watching their video a couple weeks ago because of, you know, Alex Grinch was the new DC at Oklahoma. So we turned on their 2017 film, and I'm like, daggum, these guys are really, really good on
defense. Let me tell you something. It's impressive what he did with their D line, with some of the run stuffing stuff that they did was next level. It was really impressive.
Really impressive, you know, and he's going to get that Oklahoma group playing like that, you know, which I've already seen improvement out of those guys in the short time that he's already been there, you know. And so then I got to turn on this year's Washington State and last year's Washington State. It doesn't look any different, you know. Tracy Clays is their defensive coordinator now. He was the DC of Minnesota and was their interim head coach there for a while, and they didn't change any of the scheme because those kids understand what to do, and it's challenging. They mix their fronts a bunch. They blitz you a good bit. They're really, really aggressive, and they play extremely hard. So you mix in their offense, what they've done forever. It looks like Texas Tech offense back in 2002 when I was there, you know, and then you mix in the really good play on defense and a sound special teams game. This is a top 20 team, deservingly so.
I want to ask you about when you prepare, and maybe especially for a guy like Leach, who, you know, this is a system, right? I'm genuinely curious, from a percentage breakdown standpoint, how much your preparation has to be for the players that you're going to play, you know, and being prepared for every position, what they do, strengths and weaknesses, versus preparing for the coach. What percentage of your preparation is set up for preparing for a defensive or offensive coordinator versus the players that you have to play on both sides of the ball?
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand. I think, you know, what I do, and I think everybody's probably got a different approach to this, is, but I try to wrap my mind around their personnel first. You know, figure out who they are and what positions they play and how much they move around, whether it's offense or whether it's defense. I mean, you try to figure out where their bodies line up and who they are. See if there's matchups you can take advantage of. Once you understand who they are and what they play, you can kind of start figuring out what their schemes are, which, you know, once I do that for a day or two, then I kind of tend to forget about their personnel, and it's all about the scheme as far as what you think the coordinator is going to do. Some of it's guesswork, some of it's not. Some of it's like, these guys just do this, and they're not going to change. For instance, what Washington State does on offense is different than what anybody else does on offense in the entire country. All this, and a lot's been made about Mike Leach's coaching tree, and it's fairly impressive. There's a bunch of them out there, but each and every one of us has kind of taken that system and changed it and molded it into our own. Where what he did at Tech in 2002 is the same exact thing that he's doing right now. It's the same sets, it's the same plays, it's the same signals, it's the same everything. They just execute it as well as anybody in the country. And, you know, they they believe in what they do, and they stick to it, and it's incredibly impressive to be able to watch.
Man, this well, and you mentioned Gardner Minshew. And how impressive. He was 22 at 25 for Jacksonville. And you had talked to him about to Leach about him. He liked him as much as any quarterback.
I talked to Coach Leach before every draft about his players. It's a long conversation, as Dana will probably tell you. It's a long one. Dana's conversations aren't as long. When I talk to Leach, it's like, hey, you ever seen, well, who's that one guy? If you looked at the, like, it'll turn into something completely different. But Minshew, he pounded the table for Minshew harder than, and he backs his players, but he said, this is the smartest and most accurate guy I think I've ever coached. He said he is unbelievably smart with great poise. And it shows up on tape, but you're like, eh, I mean, he's kind of small, this and that. Boy, he looked poised last time.
I wonder what he'd say now, though, because this kid, Anthony Gordon, is 81% completion percentage, 884 yards, 9 touchdowns, and 1 interception so far in 2 games. He's got 884 yards, so I don't know if it's going to change any, but this kid looks like he picked up right where Minshew left off, Dana.
Yeah, it's really funny because we fought the system quarterback label forever and ever and ever. And, you know, like I said, what Cliff does is a little bit different, you know, but it's basically the same system, you know, and what, you know, we've turned ground and pound a good bit here over the last 5 years or whatever it is. And then, you know, what Jake does is a little bit different. What Lincoln does is a little bit different, you know, but we kept fighting that system quarterback thing and all the gurus like Lance out there. I'm not insulting you. I'm just saying all the guys that say these guys can or can't play in the NFL for years and years and years, it was like, no, they can't play in the NFL, and which is why, like, Case Keenum didn't get drafted, yeah. You know, and is still currently playing in the NFL. But that label is gone.
Yeah,
you know?
Goff and Mahomes shattered
because
that.
Because
yeah.
You know, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, and then, you know, I mean, Lamar Jackson was kind of put in that category a little
Pat
bit.
Pat Mahomes,
too.
Is he any good?
Jared Goff?
It's just gone. And,
yeah, it is.
And so Gardner, and he's not a very tall guy. I you know, talked with him several times in some of the offseason, all-star games or combines or whatever it is, and he's probably a 6 foot, 6 foot one guy. He's a lot like Case is, and those guys have proved that they can have a ton of success in the NFL. That the Gordon guy's the same type guy. You know, he's a 6'2 guy that, you know, doesn't run particularly well, but does a great job in the pocket. Their O-line gives him about 6 seconds to throw the ball. So he's going to find one of those guys eventually. The receivers understand space and get open, and they do a great job of completing the football. So it's going to be a big challenge for us here Friday night.
I want to ask you about this. One of the reasons why everyone's had to change their mindset. I mean, I changed when I watched Goff. I had a good grade on Goff, and it took him a year. But I mean, that was the first real air raid, like, big success. And then you had Pat Mahomes. And then Baker and Kyler, and you mentioned Case Keenum, here's Case Keenum still doing it after all these years. I think a big part of that, though, Dane, is that NFL teams who are the slowest to come around, the best are high school coaches who have to make do with what they have, and small colleges, and then the last to figure it out is the NFL. They're the slowest adapters. It is interesting, though, that since they're starting to adapt some of the college football philosophies that you guys have had for several years now, it's amazing how these quarterbacks now are natural fits in many systems now.
Yeah, the majority of it just becomes because of the shotgun aspect of it. I mean, it was interesting to follow that because we did get irritated with that label on our quarterbacks for a long time. And, you know, clearly we've been in the shotgun for ever since we started doing this way back in the day. But you look in the shotgun rate in the NFL continues to go up. I mean, it went up every single year over the course of, like, starting a decade ago. I mean, it was in the 40s, and now it's probably in the 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever it is. So, you know, just the comfort level of being able to be back there and execute the schemes from, from a non-traditional old-school NFL offense, I think is appealing to a lot of people out there.
Tanner Holgorsen, brought to you by HRP, Damaris Barbecue, and Chastang Ford, right here on ESPN 97.5. Going to be at NRG Stadium against Washington State on Friday night, so he's moved the day up earlier this week. And then another day earlier next week because of the scheduling quirk that is the University of Houston schedule. Let's take one here. We got Dana for another segment. Don't you go anywhere. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. I want to talk about Oops and what great people, you know, I met Jason and Rosie and So great people. And Jason and Rosie are so concerned about this business, about giving the quality service that they give every single time. You may talk to Rosie on the phone because she's one of them that schedules, and she'll price whatever it is. Now you got to give her the honest truth. Is there coffee stain or wine or urine or wine whatever beer in your carpet? And that's more difficult. But they're going to spend more time on it, and they're going to make sure that all of that horrible stain is gone. And because they use 250 degree heat, they don't use soap. You can't use soap on this thing, because if you do, then it's just going to stay behind and your carpets are going to get dirty again. So they do it right. They do it with trained and background screen professionals, employees, not contractors. And they're going to make sure that it's done perfectly before they leave. They're in, they're out. They're not trying to upsell you. That's an important thing about this as well. And they can clean anything. So if you're looking for the best carpet cleaner, I got them for you. Oopssteam.com. That's oopssteam.com. 281-822-0561. Tell them you heard it right here on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Dana Holgorsen Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Chastang Ford, Damaris Barbecue, and HRNP. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's John Lance and Coach Dana Holgorsen.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5, 847. Dana Holgorsen, HRNP, Damaris Barbecue, and Chastang Ford, all bringing you the Dana Holgorsen Show here every week, usually on Thursdays from 8:30 to 9, but we've got to move it around a little bit because of the schedule. All right, on Friday night, you can have one of these two things. You can win the turnover battle by one, or you could have two more yards per play than Washington State. Which one do you take?
That's one of the dumbest questions I've ever been asked.
Two more yards per play.
Yes, I would think so.
Well, now, every coach says the turnover battle is the most important thing. Obviously, third down. What's the most important thing for you offensively? How would you rank them?
Turnovers is like fourth or fifth. You know, the studies that we've done, you got to win that thing by like three or four in order for it to really affect the game. You know, turnovers are all about, you know, when they happen, where they happen, and what you do with them. You know, like, for instance, we lost the turnover battle last week 2-1. You know, it obviously didn't have any impact on the game whatsoever. We won the turnover battle 2-0 against Oklahoma. That really didn't, you know, it helped. It just didn't really do anything negatively towards them. You know, if you're turning the ball over in the red zone and it's preventing you from getting points, that's big. If you turn the ball over deep in your territory, or you throw a pick and they take it to the house, or they scoop and score, I mean, that's a big deal. But, you know, turnovers in my mind are just change of possessions more than they affect the game.
Okay.
So yards per play is big. You know, if you're plus two in yards per play, you're going to win. You know, the red zone touchdown rate is a big one. You know, teams move the ball so well nowadays that if you're moving the ball and kicking field goals, you're probably going to lose. You know, so the kicking game is important. When you got to, you know, when you get a penalty and you stall and it's a long yardage situation, you got to get points, but you can't consistently do that. The critical downs are big. You know, we shoot for about plus 10% in the critical downs. As a team, that's a big one. Field position is really big too. If you're plus 15 or so in the field position thing, you're probably going to win that game as well.
Yeah. And by critical downs, you mean third and fourth down percentage. And plus 10 is good enough. Plus 10.
Well, if you're like, see, like, for instance, we try to shoot offensively for 50%, and most defenses shoot for around 35%. You know, so, you know, as a team, you know, we try to gauge all these things as a team. So that would put you at about plus 15%. You know, so if you're around plus 10 to plus 15, plus 12, somewhere in there, then you got a pretty good chance of winning that game.
Yep. Dana Holgorsen with us here on ESPN 97.5. This is going to be, and I don't know if Mike Leach is going to even recognize you anymore because of how much you're running the football now. You're going to get kicked out of the Air Raid Club, probably, I would imagine, this week.
Well, I did. I did get kicked out 5 years ago. That's when, you know, what was it, 2015, 2016, we were, you know, we were rushing for about 300 a game and throwing for about, I don't know, 200, 150, 200, somewhere in there, something like that. So they done kicked me out back then. Hell Mummy came and watched me play, and we won. We beat Baylor, and I think we threw for like 90 yards. It was really cold, and we just couldn't do anything. And he just sat there and shook his head on the sidelines the entire day. Leach wouldn't call me back, which... really didn't bother me too much because, as Lance alluded to, those conversations are well over an hour.
Yeah, it's saved you a couple hours right there. Not calling.
It drifts.
You know, and now we're back to, you know, Derek's, you know, making progress, and but we run the ball pretty good. You know, Kyle Porter, local kid from Katy, had over 100 last week, and you know, Derek's had, you know, he's got close to a couple hundred yards or whatever it is. So we're back in the ground and pound aspect of things. So he probably won't even acknowledge me in pregame.
Yeah. I predicted that you would be, you know, tougher or coach harder after the win over Prairie View than you. I don't want to say you didn't coach hard after Oklahoma, but would be tougher on the team after that win as opposed to the loss at Oklahoma.
Yeah, we've been pretty hard on them here this week. We had a bad second half. You know, the towards the end of the second quarter, offense played really well in the first half. You know, we scored on six possessions and was rolling pretty good. And you know, defense was playing pretty good. Had a long drive early and gave up a field goal. Had a really long drive before half, which was about a six-minute deal, which was unacceptable. And they scored a touchdown going into the half, which kind of, well, literally just pissed everybody off, you know. So we had a bad halftime, in my opinion. I thought defense kind of regrouped and came out there and played well in the second half, but offense couldn't do anything. Once you turn that switch off, it's hard to switch it back on. So we had a lot of things that we could talk about, and that's just the coaching aspect of it. A lot of things we got to work on. A lot of things we got to get to work on. But with a short week, you got to be careful how you do it, especially with a team that like Washington State coming in. That's the single biggest attribute that they have that they play with is the effort that they play with. They play hard every single snap. All 11 play hard every single snap. So we better have some energy, you know. So you got to work on the stuff that you need work on, but you also got to keep them fresh, ready to go for the game.
Do you feel like there's a thought that playing a team like Oklahoma, you know, you can get in a real physical matchup and it can have an impact the next week? But there's also the thought that it's like swinging two bats on the on deck circle, swinging a donut, where some of your next few games get a little bit easier. Do you think it has that? How do you think those kind of early season big time encounters, how does that build your team or distract from your team?
You know, it's a good question. We did gain some confidence from that. We're not into moral victories. That's not what I'm talking about. But they're a top five team, and we had some success with them throughout the course of that game. You know, they played well, and at the end of the day, we weren't going to win it, you know, obviously, but we do feel like we competed against them and we gained confidence from it. And, you know, we were probably a little disinterested in playing four quarters last week just because we really didn't have to after the first quarter. It was pretty much done. But, You know, obviously this is a whole nother deal. It doesn't take our players long to figure out, turn the video on. These guys are daggum good. They fly around. Their schemes are good. They're well coached. A top 20 team. They've won 13 out of the last 15. They've won nine a year for the last 4 years, nine or more a year for the last 4 years. So, they better get ready for a battle. And it's my job to make sure that they're ready to go. And hopefully we've got the work done and we understand the game plan, but we can get recovered and ready and fresh and ready to play Friday night.
And it sure would be nice. A Friday night in Texas is kind of difficult, isn't it? I mean, what do you feel about playing on Friday nights and taking away from high school football?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it. I think Thursday nights have a good place. It really doesn't matter what I think. I mean, it's all TV-driven, ESPN TV-driven, and obviously this game was scheduled a long time ago. I like neutral site games. You know, we're trying to schedule some neutral site games at NRG in the future. You know, unfortunately, this isn't a neutral site game. This is a home game for us, which, you know, home games need to be played in our stadium. Our the return trip to Pullman is going to happen in 2 or 3 years. We got to go back up. We're going to have to go to Washington State and play on their home turf here in a couple years. So, you know, I'd rather this game be on Saturday, and I'd rather this game be in our stadium. But there's nothing I can do about it. We'll take what we got, and we'll go make the most of it.
Yeah, probably when this was scheduled, you didn't have this stadium.
Yeah, I'm more than likely not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know the previous AD, he, you know, like the Oklahoma deal, it was the same thing. You know, our home game was at NRG, and that turned out really good. And hopefully we'll have the same outcome here for the Houston Cougars, not the Washington State Cougars. But that, and then we had to go to Norman. That was the return trip.
Yeah.
So to me, that's an unfair advantage.
Yep.
You know, and our home and homes need to be home and homes, and neutral sites need to be neutral sites. And I'm a big proponent of both of them.
All right. That's Dana Holgorsen joining us every week right here. Tonight at Lil Woodrow's on Shepherd, his radio show that you should just go watch. Go there, hang out, meet the coach. And all you Cougs should be out there supporting Coach Holgorsen. And I'll see you over there tonight, Dana, at Lil Woodrow's on Shepherd. In the meantime, you know how I'm going to get there and how you're going to get there? Chastang Ford, right? Am I right?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. My expedition's sitting out front ready for me to wrap up practice, and I head there at around 6:30.
That's it. So get on over there and see Dana's expedition. I got the same one, and it is just beautiful. And you can't get I'm telling you can't get a better deal. I know you may have. Well, of course, the big, huge Ford dealers are going to give you a better price. That's simply not the case. They are going to give you make sure you get all those rebates, that you get a great price, that you get the best financing. There's a lot of 0% financing going on mostly all their vehicles. Right now, this is a great, great time to buy, and the Chastangs are great people to buy them from. You can join the Chastang family. I joined the Chastang family a couple of weeks ago. I got to tell you, the buying experience is just excellent. If you're looking for that Ford truck, and they're, by the way, they're the Ford truck experts. They service everything that they sell. They are awesome. I'm telling you, you will love your experience at Chastang Ford. It's just east of 59 on the 610 loop. It's exit Homestead, not Hempstead, exit Homestead. They've been in business since 1933, and there's a reason that they're in business that long, because they just do it right at Chastang Ford. Dana, we appreciate it. As always, we will talk to you again next week right here on ESPN 97.5.